Tonight for our lesson, I'm going to read to you from the book of Job, chapter 1, first of all, verses 1 through 3, and then I will jump down to verse 6 and continue reading through verse 12. That's Job chapter 1. There was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job. And that man was blameless and upright, one who feared God and turned away from evil. There were born to him 7 sons and 3 daughters. He possessed 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 yoke of oxen, and 500 female donkeys, and very many servants, so that this man was the greatest of all the people of the East. Now, there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came among them. And the Lord said to Satan, "From where have you come?" Satan answered the Lord and said, "From going to and fro on the earth and from walking up and down on it." And the Lord said to Satan, "Have you considered my servant Job, that there is none like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man who fears God and turns away from evil?" And then Satan answered the Lord and said, "Does Job fear God for no reason? Have you not put a hedge around him and his house and all that he has on every side? Have you blessed the work of his hands and the possessions and his possessions has increased in the land? But stretch out your hand and touch all that he has, and he will curse you to your face." And the Lord said to Satan, "Behold, all that he has is in your hand. Only do not stretch out your hand, or do not only against him. Do not stretch out your hand." So Satan went out from the presence of the Lord. As we see this story beginning to unfold, we know from past readings that the next days for Job was very difficult. Job's servants were attacked in the field, killed with the sword. Fire fell from heaven and burned up his flocks of sheep and the servants that were tending them. 3 groups of the Chaldeans attacked and destroyed his camels and the servants attending to them. A great wind struck the house where all of his children was, and all were killed. All of this in the span of a day. All of this the works of Satan. But in verse 22 of chapter 1, it says, "And all this, Job did not sin or charge God with wrong." So in chapter 2, Satan comes again to God, and he's wanting to attack Job again. This time personally, attacking his body, and God allows it. So he strikes Job with loathsome sores, from the sole of his foot to the crown of his head. But it's verse 9 that really gets my attention in chapter 2. Then his wife says to him, "Do you still hold fast your integrity? Curse God and die." You know, when we study about this book in the Bible, which is believed to be the oldest of the written manuscripts, we mostly focus on Job himself. We think about his suffering. We think about his patience. We think about his trials of life. But tonight I want to look at this story from a different viewpoint. I want to focus our attention on Mrs. Job and see what we can learn from the one episode that we have of her and the one sentence that we have from her in Scripture. You see, verse 9 is all that we know about her, but she says a lot in this one sentence that she makes in verse 9. You see, she looks at this entire situation somewhat differently than the way Job has looked at it. And I think it would do well for us to look at her eyes, her attitude, her thoughts on what was going on in the life of Job at this time. First thing I want to suggest to you is that she emphasized her present life. Now, in all fairness, everything that happened to Job, with an exception of the sores on his body, it happened to her too. It was hers. It was her home. It was her children. Everything that was destroyed belonged to her as much as it did him. So she had to be suffering in the same way that Job is suffering. She is living with a terrible loss the same way that Job is living with a terrible loss. So she has, I guess, maybe an understanding right to be upset, to be in despair, to be discouraged. She basically indicates to Job that God has taken everything away from them. Now, you know, if you're one of those who just focuses on the things that you have here and now, you're missing so much in life. Now, you know, I have to admit, let me give you an example of this. When my two children were born, that was two of the greatest days in my life. And it was just wonderful just to look at them, because there they were here, and they were mine, they were my children. Pat and I had been blessed tremendously with this gift. And you know, my first time I took a look at Mandy or Philip, I didn't think about them as adults. I didn't think about their future. I didn't think about what they will be when they grow up. And I sure didn't think about who she'd marry. But you know, don't tell him, she did all right. I didn't think about any of those things. I was thinking about the moment. I was so wrapped up in the moment. And you know, whether it's good or bad, we can get wrapped up in a moment, can't we? When things go wrong in life, we can think about nothing but what's going on at the time, and we can't think about what's going on to happen tomorrow. We can't think about what's going to happen next week, next month, next year. We have people in this room whose homes were devastated by the tornadoes that came through a few years ago. And when you were looking at the hole in your roof, or you were looking at the destruction that was around you, you probably didn't think about what we're going to do next year, what we're going to do in 2 years from now, or what we're going to do later on. We're thinking about the moment. And that's human nature. We think about the moment, don't we? Yeah. She emphasized, though, that she was worried about now. You know, we have another good example in the Bible about this, and it's found in the life of the rich farmer. We read of him in Luke chapter 12. When we read this story, we find that this man has given full attention to what he has. He's looking at what is in his possession at the time, and he's looking at how he's going to keep it. His treasures of life were more important to him than the future of his soul. Mrs. Job wasn't thinking about her relationship with God when she said this to Job. She wasn't thinking about Job's relationship to God. She says, you need to leave God alone. You need to walk away from him. Look what he's done to you. My friends, God is not opposed to us having things. God is not opposed to us enjoying the things that we have. But what the problem is we put so much emphasis on those things that we cannot give attention to God. And I have to tell you, and you know this as well as I do, everything that we have, everything that we own, could be devastated by tornado, by hurricane, by fire in a matter of minutes. And some of us have seen all of these work in our area here. It is sad to note that people today are sometimes just like Job's wife. They think about the present, and they don't think about the future. Job said in chapter 1, verse 21, naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked I shall return. The Lord gave, the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. And Paul basically says the same thing in 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 7. For we brought nothing into this world, and it is certain that we can carry nothing out. We need to be careful that we don't become so involved in our things that we're ready to walk away and give up on God. Another interesting thing about Mrs. Job is the fact that she ridicules her husband because of the attitude that he has toward God. Instead of encouraging him, she tried to get him to give up. You know, no doubt, at this point, Job is in a measure of despair. He has gone from being the greatest in the East, it said, to having absolutely nothing. He's lost his family. He's lost his servants. He's lost his livestock. He's lost everything. Imagine waking up one day and it all being gone. And you don't have a next step to take. What a horrible feeling it must have been for him. And now his wife comes up to him and says, "Well, Job, this is just too much. You need to just curse God and die. Things can't get worse, and they're never going to get better. Why don't you just give up?" You know, Solomon tells us in Proverbs 18, verse 21, that life and death are in the power of the tongue. And oh, how true that is. The spoken word, it can either bring a smile to your face or it can bring a tear to your eye. The spoken word can either give you hope in the heart or it can destroy your heart. Words can cut and words can heal. But something that they cannot do, they cannot do both at the same time. And that's why Paul tells us in Galatians 4 and verse 6, "Let your speech always be with grace, seasoned with salt." You know, Job responded to his wife, and he said, "You speak as a foolish woman. Shall we receive good from God, and shall not we receive all evil? We get both." And in all of these things, Job still did not sin with his lips against God. Another thing about her is the fact that she accused God falsely. "Curse God and die." And in saying this, she is laying everything that has happened to Job at the feet of God. "God, this has to be your fault. God has done this to us. God has taken away our livelihood. God has taken away our family. God has done this. You need to curse God and die." You know, it's amazing how people will do that. And I have to tell you that he wasn't the first one to do that. You know, in the story of Adam and Eve, Eve actually blamed the right person. This serpent, the devil was in the serpent. "He beguiled me, he deceived me, and I ate." But Adam comes along and says, "Wait a minute, Lord, this woman who you gave to be with me, she gave me of this fruit and I ate of it." He is going straight to the source. He is blaming God for this incident that happened. We read this in Genesis 3 and verse 12. The Israelites did it. Exodus chapter 15, verse 24, they find themselves bottled up at the edge of the Red Sea. They had been freed by Pharaoh and Egypt, and now that Pharaoh is breathing down their necks. And what comes out of their mouth? "God, did you send us here to be destroyed?" We begin to point fingers at God because we don't see a way out. And that was only the first of many complainings that the Israelites tried to blame God for. When they were hungry and thirsty in the wilderness, "God, did you bring us out here just to starve us?" And even with Joshua and their defeat at Ai, Lord, did you lead us across the Jordan just to let us fall into the hands of the Amorites? They were God blamers. And in this instance particularly, it was one of their own that had caused this problem. When bad things happen, we like to blame someone else. And usually, just like Job's wife and just like the Israelites, we go straight to the top. Lord, why did you cause me to lose my job? Lord, why did you take my loved one away from me in death? Lord, why have you done this to me? Why did you let this happen? I've had people come to me and ask that question many times. And my answer is always the same. God didn't do this to you. God is not the cause of our problems. The cause of our problems comes down to Satan and the sin that he spreads among us. James 1:13, God does not tempt any man. God does not cause evil in your life. Will he test you? Yes, he will. What is he doing? He's testing your faith. Is he tempting you with evil? No, he is not. Satan causes our weaknesses. Satan deceives us into making bad choices. Calamities of life is part of sin. And then finally, Mrs. Job served Satan's purpose. You know, we talked about this morning somewhat. Satan will work through people. He used Eve to get to Adam. He used Judas to get to Christ. He used Peter in an effort to hinder Christ in Matthew 16, verse 32. And Peter called him Satan. Get thee hence, Satan. Get behind me. Don't try to put this at my foot. This is Satan's work. And men still use him today. Paul tells us in 2 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 13 beginning, "And such men are false apostles, deceitful workmen, disguising themselves as apostles of Christ." And no wonder, for even Satan disguises himself as an angel of light. And so it is no surprise if his servants also disguise themselves as servants of righteousness. Their end will correspond to their deeds. So yes, he does use people to work against God and to work against Christianity. Now let me ask you this. Does Satan use you, me, in the same way that he used Job's wife? If we allow him, he will. But we can resist him with God's help. Paul tells us, Ephesians 4:26, "Be angry and sin not." Even when we want to get mad and we want to use corruption and violence when we do. Paul admonishes us not to give place to the devil in the next verse, verse 27. You see, it's our choice what we do with Satan, just as it's our choice as to what we do with God. You will either oppose Satan or you will be his servant. And my friends, there is nothing in between. Jesus said, "No one can serve two masters. He will either hate the one, love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other." You can't have it both ways. This woman, she was a wife, she was a mother-in-law, and she could have used her influence to encourage her husband and to help him through what was no doubt the most difficult time that he had ever had in his life. But she allowed herself to become a tool for Satan. You know, we must remember our actions and understand that our actions has a great impact on other people. Don't be a Job's wife in your life. Tonight, if you are a Christian and you find yourself being a discouragement to others, you are letting Satan use you as his tool to harm other people. Repent of that today. Change your life. Come back to the Lord. Find the goodness and the kindness and the love that it comes from being a child of God. And put the hatred and the envy and the evil aside. And don't let Satan use you as he used Job's wife. And tonight, if you're not a Christian, we encourage you to give your life to the Lord, even now. By obeying His word, you can overcome the sin that so easily beset you. You can put it away, and you can serve God and put Satan away. Tonight, if you need to respond to the invitation, we invite you to come as we stand and sing.